Hello and welcome to the PCJ Archives. I'm Keith Parent. On March 25th, 1968, Sir David Frost sat down with U.S. Senator Bobby Kennedy. This one-on-one interview is known to be the U.S. Senator's last personal interview. Bobby Kennedy talks about communism, his heroes, his public image, the war in Vietnam, and how he would like to be remembered. After this interview was broadcast on American television, the audio track was supplied to AFR, that's Armed Forces Radio, for broadcast on their network. What you are about to hear is the original Armed Forces Radio transcription disc as it was sent out to various AFN networks. Some 2 months later, Senator Kennedy was assassinated as he walked through the kitchen of the Ambassador Hotel in Los Angeles, California, on June 5, 1968, after winning the California primary election for the Democratic nomination for President of the United States.
Senator Kennedy, wherever I go in America, people always say to me that this is so-and-so, but this isn't the real America. If you had to pick one place, where would you point to and say that, to you, this was the real America?
Well, I think it's probably difficult. If you ask me for a specific place, I think perhaps smaller towns are upstate New York, Iowa, but I suppose there are a lot of different communities. I think once you get away from the large urban centers where life is a little bit more frantic, I think you might see more about the understanding and the courage and the compassion of people. You focus more of it, more upon it, I think, in some of our smaller communities.
Are there any characteristics that you'd point to, really, and say a distinguishing marks of the American, really?
Yeah, but it almost sounds like a 4th of July speech. That's the problem. I think that people are very compassionate, and I think they're very generous, and I think that they are very brave and very idealistic, sometimes impractical. You know, that sounds strange, considering all of our technological and scientific advancement, but I think that in some ways, because things have come very easy to us compared to many other countries, that we're impractical, perhaps, in our relationship with other countries. And I think because I think there's a generous spirit, that we perhaps also get hurt because people don't recognize it, and we're apt to think that sometimes they're right is possibly more on our side than at other times. So, you know, I think it's, I think there were some marvelous natural characteristics of the American people.
In an election year, of course, everyone behaves rather like a doctor, you know, finding, you know, what's wrong with the patient America and sort of suggesting remedies and so on. And everyone talks about the malaise, and there are many symptoms of it. I mean, whether one looks in the cities or the other subjects you've been dealing with in your speeches and so on. Do you think that things like the cities or the attitude to the war or the race question, do you think these are the malaise, or do you think they're symptoms of something deeper that's got to be put right?
I think it's deeper. I think those are symptoms of it. I think it's really sort of involves the national purpose, almost the soul of the country. And I think it's involved also to some extent in the tremendous material wealth we have in the United States and what you're going to do with it and how it's going to be utilized. Also the tremendous military wealth or power that we have and the fact that we're involved in this terribly difficult struggle, and we don't quite know what to make of it. And so that there are these eruptions that you mention that I think happen or occur because of all of that. And I think it really comes down to really the national purpose of what we're trying to accomplish and what is up at the top that's giving us some direction or some leadership and perhaps a lack of confidence in all of that.
And if things go according to plan, say by next January, when you became or become president, what would be in the first, I mean, these things are things that take time, but what sort of initiatives, what sort of things could you do about this deeper problem in the first month?
Well, I think really just to, you know, you asked me earlier what I admired or what I thought were the outstanding characteristics of Americans. I just think to bring them into play where those haven't been called upon. You know, I think, for instance, in your own country or other countries, frequently those are only the bravery or courage or generosity are only called on for a country in time of war, really, aren't they? I mean, there's all the terrible things that happen in war, but there are also all these marvelous things that happen toward one's fellow human being. One gives one's life, one drops on a grenade, or whatever you do in order to help somebody else.
Right, we say that.
So I think that we are in a difficult period of time, and what you would try to do is to bring forth those marvelous characteristics. I think President Kennedy did it to some extent, for instance, during the establishment of the Peace Corps. There you have tens of thousands of young people and older people as well willing to give up their lives, give up their homes, give up their comfort, and go all over the world in order to help others. I think that's really characteristic of the United States.
Yes.
You would hope that that's... That, I mean, you, rather than talk about some specific program, this is what I'm going to do about the
city. No, I think this is much, much, much more convincing. Because what you were just saying, I mean, you, more than anyone bidding for the presidencies and so on, has a clearer perception of what the presidency can do. Was there something, in fact, that you mentioned President Kennedy, that he taught you about the scope of how much the potentialities of the presidency? I mean, in a sense, what you're saying is that it's got more potential than's
right.
being realized.
Well, I think that's true, and it goes beyond sort of specific pieces of legislation. I think an awful lot of legislation can be passed, and you start arguing about what housing bill is better than another housing bill, or what job program, the manpower training program is better than another manpower. People get lost with all of that, and understandably, they can't keep up with all the things that are happening in their own community, let alone what is happening at the federal level and the legislation that is being passed. But the presidency is something far beyond that. It's not that you're going to agree with the president on every issue, for instance. There's going to be tremendous disagreement. But the fact that it's giving the country some direction and that it's somebody that you feel that's up, is there, that's looking out for your own interests, not in a selfish way, and more and beyond that, the interest of the country and the interest of the next generation. And you might disagree with what he is doing, but you can understand it, and you rally to him, and therefore to the country in time of crisis. For instance, President Kennedy's popularity was never high until after the Bay of Pigs, when he said, "We made a mistake, but we've learned something from it." Then it sort of brings although people thought that was a terrible disaster and terrible mistake, and wasn't he foolish and stupid to do it, you still honor the fact that this is whoever it is part of you and part of the country and part of what you have such affection for.
Well, that's what excited me about the period 60 to 63. It seemed to me the first time that what one had dreamed was possible could come true, and that one person could set a style somehow for a whole country's, as you say, you disagree with individual.
Yeah, I think, but it's what the people are, really. I mean, President Kennedy maybe stimulated it. But it wasn't what made those days. It wasn't him. I mean, he obviously played a role, but I mean, it was those young people who went and served, as I said. It was the young men and women who went and helped registration. It was those who fought or struggled against discrimination. It was the people who were doing extra kinds of things on behalf of their neighbor or their community and felt that politics or political life was an honorable profession, as John Buchan said, Lord Tweedsmuir said, and that you could make a difference.
Right.
I mean, that I think it's so important that we, so much now, you're frustrated about the fact that you can't affect the course of action, the course of events. You can't affect Vietnam, you can't affect the riots in the cities, you can't affect your white and the blacks are going to come in and try to take your home away from you, or going to move into the neighborhood, or going to shoot somebody, or slights, and the blacks are saying nobody's going to try to help. But it's the fact that somebody can make a difference and that it's worthwhile trying to make a difference.
But would your approach be similar to President Kennedy's, in fact?
Living in a different time. I mean, the 1960s, late 1960s and the 70s are different than they were in the early 1960s.
Right.
I was happy to be part of that. But that was part of my life that has passed. And what I'm looking to and toward is not continuing what ended in 1963, but beginning what can happen in 1969, which will have an effect for the 1970s. That's what's important, not what we did in the early 1960s, but what we can do from now on.
What do you think, Senator, what do you think is really the, as you look at your career thus far, what's your, do you feel proudest of as your greatest achievement thus far?
I think the role in the Cuban Missile Crisis, I would think. Yes, that. I don't think there's anything else sort of compared to that. The only reason that I hesitated at all is because I felt strongly about the election of 1960 and having a role in the change, because I can't think that affected the course of action and the course of history, at least for a period of time, for the United States, so that therefore having played a role in that was important. But if you took one event and what I think was most important and most significant and where I perhaps made the best, most important contribution, where the question was whether the world was going to be blown up or not, that was the Cuban Missile Crisis.
And the contribution there, you would said, was one of making the right decision or
yes,
giving
well,
the right advice.
The right decision was made by President Kennedy.
Yeah.
But just what, you know, the ideas that I was able to contribute, yes, which he finally...
Because if you become president, you've then got to find people like you, haven't you?
Well, it's interesting because you see, if I suppose the 14 people who were involved, who were very, very significant, bright, able, dedicated people who all had the greatest affection for the United States, I suppose maybe some of the, probably the brightest kind of group that you could get together under those circumstances, if six of them had been president of the United States, I think that the world might have been blown up. That's one side of it, and the fact is also 6 out of 14, and the other side of it is Mr. Khrushchev had been a different man at that time, the world also would have blown up. I mean, we think of how brilliant or able President Kennedy was, I think we have to also look at the other side of it, that this is also involves our adversaries. And if you, and, you know, and I think back, you look back in history, you know, or trace the evolvement of the First World War, of Austria's miscalculation about what was going to happen, and then the Soviet Union's miscalculation by calling up their troops, and then Germany's idea of, because they, Russia mobilized their troops, so therefore they were going to take this, that step, and then England taking and France reacting to that. Everybody involved in all of that miscalculated what the other person was going to do. And I mean, that's, now you miscalculate in a major way, and you, that's the last miscalculation you make.
Right. Well, this is what's so terrifying, really, that we all make jokes about our respective intelligence services, you know, and so on. But in the last resort, the horror of not, of, you know, getting wrong information today, I mean, there's not time to check.
But it's not only wrong information, which is terribly important, but it's judgment.
Right.
I mean, where, you know, you can go back to the Cuban Missile Crisis, where are you going to intercept a particular vessel? Where are you going to let that vessel go through? I mean, the whole idea, for instance, President Kennedy spent more time trying to give the Soviet Union time to calculate their position than to get the missiles out of Cuba. And, I mean, there was no question you could have brought it to a head at a much earlier time. And there were those involved in counseling President Kennedy who wanted to do it immediately. And that the idea of giving the other person time to understand what the consequences of his action are is so important. And to have some judgment about what he's going to do and is and will not do is so valuable.
Yes,
but in the last analysis, as I say, I think it's, if you ask me what the most important characteristic or what the most important qualification a person should have in that kind of a position, it's judgment.
No, I can see very clearly why you picked Cuba. Is there any one episode in your career that you'd like to rewrite?
I can't think of any immediately. I mean, obviously there are things in, that are out of one's hands that I would rather have never occurred. But I don't know that there's anything that I think that I would have changed it.
Nothing you... I was trying to... One can usually think of anything you wish you'd left unsaid or anything like that.
Well, I think that if... President Eisenhower said about Richard Nixon, that when he was asked whether he could think of something he contributed, if you give me a week, I can think of something, but I'm sure I can think of a lot of things, and I'm sure there are things that I said in the last 24 hours that fill that category. But I mean, if you're, I think you're talking about in a major way, and that during the course of my career, I mean, obviously, I made a lot of mistakes, and if you're talking about in the major areas in which I've had the control over the decisions, perhaps if I thought about it, I perhaps could do it better. But
we'll leave it to President Eisenhower or Richard Nixon to think about it. Is there, as you read about yourself in the press and so on, do you recognize the picture of yourself? Or is there something that we should know about you, some quality that you reckon doesn't get full play in the press? Do you think, are they summing up right? Or do you think there's something they leave out?
Kind, thoughtful, sweet, that kind of...
do you think they miss that a little bit?
Occasionally, no, I don't know. I think that they've had an opportunity to analyze me so that they can reach whatever conclusion, perhaps much better than I can myself.
One of the things that everyone seems to say... everybody hopes they change and develop, but in your case, people particularly say that you've changed and developed. I mean, in the sense that Gloria Steinem was writing in the last issue of Glamour, quoting high-level intellectual publications, about how you'd changed. I read a book in which Ted Sorensen said how you'd changed. Do you feel you've changed more than most people?
No, I don't know. I'm sure I've changed. I hope I've changed. And I hope I've grown, and I hope I have more understanding and more comprehension and more compassion, and all of those things that all of us would like to have as we grow older.
In one book, though, that about all the candidates this year, written before you were one, indeed, though, they quoted your wife as saying that the great change happened 2 years ago and that you suddenly realized you couldn't get things done fast enough or something. That was what she was quoted as saying.
I'm not familiar.
The reason I mentioned it is that it impresses me how many people who were once opposed to you have come round.
Well, I was in a different aspect of my life, really. I mean, I suppose up until November of 1963 that my whole life was built around President Kennedy, and that was what was important to me and what I felt strongly about, not just a dedication to an individual and not dedication to a my brother, but just the fact that I thought through him that we could make a contribution and remedy injustices and change the direction of the United States and accomplish some good. And so my life was dedicated to that, and not so much just to what I was going to be or what role I was going to play or whether I was the most beloved figure in the United States. And so I think that that was the only thing that meant anything to me. I expect after November 1963 that perhaps I was looked upon in different eyes, and perhaps, and obviously I had to play a different role, because what existed for me before that period of time didn't exist afterwards.
People sort of felt that you had to do the unpopular things by the very virtue, like you quoted 60 as one of the things you were proud of, that you had to do the unpopular things in 60.
Well, those are my friends who excused me during those periods of time. It was just because he had to do the unpopular things for his brother, I don't know.
How would you define leadership?
I think to really to inspire people to exercise their best qualities.
That's a pretty good definition. Do you believe... Sorry, you were
going to say... No, I was just thinking of that story about the French general who yelled out the window, "There go my people, I must follow them, I'm their leader." But I don't think that's it.
Hear, hear.
I think it's the opposite of that.
Hear, hear. Do you believe in the principle, my country right or wrong?
No, I think that one has this... affection or feeling for its country, but I think of what Camus said during the war with Algeria, that that's my criticism, talking about his criticism during that period of time, that my criticism comes because I want to love my country in justice. And I think that's what we want. We want our have this affection and feeling for our country and justice.
Would you redefine today the word communist, really? I mean, it doesn't mean the same as it did 20 years ago. I mean, it's not a monolithic international conspiracy anymore, isn't it?
No.
How would you define it today?
Well, I suppose it differs in each one of the countries, really. I mean, I suppose one of the reasons that it's less dangerous and why it's... That we have to adjust in ourselves about it is because the fact it's not controlled. It's not just a system that's controlled out of one nation's capital and therefore the kind of power that it had before. But I think it's I think it's very difficult because I suppose there's as much difference between what is happening in China and what is happening in Czechoslovakia today as there is between what's happening in the United States and happening in a country in Latin America.
Yeah, right.
So, I mean, when you talk, if you say the United States and Indonesia are democracies, or Peru or Brazil, and you've also, how do you define democracy? I think it's very, very difficult, and I think that they adapt, the country adapts a social and political system which evolves to something that is either satisfactory to the people or satisfactory to those that are presently in power.
Well, I mean, this, it seems to me, is basic. That one's got to start, you're talking about judgment, by realizing that the definition of the word communist is very difficult. Because what frightens me a bit is that the way in which people will dub a nation or someone communist without really being able to define the word, and then that will determine all their human reactions, you know.
Well, I think probably just go back, and that's one of the struggles between the young and the older generation, because here in the United States, because the older generation, and quite rightly, thinks of communism. If you went up until 1960, you think of what they did right after the war. You think of Stalin. You think of the rape of Hungary. You think of the sweep across Europe. You think of the Korean War. All of these incidents that occurred, which showed them the bitterest and most difficult kinds of enemies. Then along came President Kennedy, who talked about lowering the barriers and that we have to try to have an accommodation with our adversaries. And then the Test Ban Treaty, go through the Cuban Missile Crisis, and then the Test Ban Treaty. And the barriers begin to be lowered. And they come on the world scene during that period of time, not having lived through any of these other events. And so that they think of communism as being, in some cases, a terrible system, and other... Parts of the world, and nothing much worse than some of our allies. But those who are the older generation think back on all of these events and all of these incidents and say, how can you trust a communist, and how can you ever accept the idea that there should be a communist? So that therefore, when we talk in our own country of the struggle between the young and the old, I think part of it at least is due to that. I think also it's the economic problems, but I think at least part of it is due to that. But when you ask me the question, I think it's just whether you're talking about Romania or Czechoslovakia or the Soviet Union or China, it's very, very difficult.
Right. You're talking about recent history.
I think that, if I may say so, yeah. I think that the fundamental concern about it really is the fact that up to at least at the present time, when there are some of these countries that are in transition, that the individual did not play the role that he should play, and that there was the control by the state over the individual, and the individual existed on behalf of the state and with a dictatorship which was unsatisfactory.
You were talking about recent history. Looking back right through history, which historical character do you feel most in sympathy with, do you most admire?
Let's see. Well, most of the ones that I really think about just rapidly are Americans, but I think probably Abraham Lincoln. I think Theodore Roosevelt I admire a great deal. I admired a lot in Herbert Hoover's career. I thought that his career and his earlier career and what he did and working in the mines, his career in China, what he did for Europe after the First World War, and what he did during the 1950s, the Hoover Commission in the United States, just marvelous contributions to our country and to his fellow man. Of course, the difficulties that he had in the 1920s as part of the cabinet and then while he was president of the United States. But when you consider his overall career, there were some marvelous things that he did.
Let me ask you.
Another person is Charles Lindbergh, who I admire a bit.
Oh, really? Well, as a pioneer?
Well, just the fact that I thought he was so brave and courageous and independent.
Which?
And a lot of characteristics.
You're often pictured in the open air. Some people write about you as if you're reckless and quote...
Ruthless.
No, well, ruthless too. We'll come to ruthless, but reckless. I was only saying reckless. Reckless in the sense that some people picture you because of the sort of all the physical things you do as taking reckless, daring steps. And other people say you're very cautious. Which of the two portraits do you recognize the most, actually? Do you think you're sometimes reckless?
No, I don't think I'm reckless.
But you like physical risk, don't you?
Well, I enjoy doing some, I suppose, some of those kinds of things. But I don't think that that's Edith Hamilton wrote that men are not, or Aeschylus, about Aeschylus, that men are not made for safe havens. And I suppose that, you know, that's part of a human being's life or a man's life.
Yes, well, I'm all for it. The other nasty word you heard, the ruthless word. Why do people say that?
I don't know. I'm sure you're going to get a lot of people to explain exactly why. I can't tell you. You know, I think that's a difficult one for me to answer.
Yes.
Why do you beat your wife?
Yes, well, ruthless, I suppose you'd rephrase it decisive.
No, I wouldn't try. No. They're entitled to what they think.
I was going to the big question and this is a huge one, but very basic in a way. What would you say, Root, that people are on Earth for?
I think you probably break it down into what to people who have some advantages and those who are just trying to survive and have their family survive. I think that if you have enough to eat, for instance. I think basically to make a contribution to some others who are less well off. Saying that I complained because I had no shoes until I met a man who had no feet, you can always find someone that has a more difficult time than you do, suffers more and faces a more difficult time one way or another. And I think in the last analysis, if you have made some contribution to someone else, to improve their life and make their life a little bit more livable, a little bit more happier. I think that that's what you should be doing.
Yes. How would you like to be remembered? I mean, what would you like the first line of a history book about Robert Kennedy to say?
I think something about the fact that I made some contribution to either, you know, my country or those who were less well off. I think, again, back to what Camus wrote about the fact that perhaps this world is a world in which children suffer, but we can lessen the number of suffering children. And if you do not do this, then who will do this? And I'd like to feel that I've done something to lessen that suffering.
In an election year, some people define an election year as a year in which people are trying to find out what the electorate are hoping for and what they're frightened of, that it's to do with hope and fear. What would you say is most Americans' main fear and main hope at this moment?
Well, I think really it's a hope for a national purpose, and I think that sounds general. But I really think that that's a recapturing of the purpose of the country and the direction of the country. I think that's what it is fundamentally, the end of divisions within the country. Not the end, because we can never end them, but I mean the bitterness, to escape from the bitterness and the hatred that exists to a greater extent in the United States than perhaps it has for a number of generations. And to give us some national purpose and restore the soul of the country. Now, what was the other question?
The fear.
The fear that we won't.
But what is... Yeah, national purpose is another thing that's terribly difficult to define.
I know, and perhaps everybody uses it when... So I agree with that. I think it's true that, however... I mean, I don't want to sound like a sort of, a speech that one gives in a patriotic holiday... But I think more than, for instance, in 1960 or in any campaign that I've... That really is... President Johnson you know, in a State of the Union message, called it restlessness. And Secretary Gardner called it, has talked about it in much more implicit terms, about the fact that people felt lost, and that the sense of action had gone out of people. Well, and I think that a lot of it's, as I say, we have this tremendous gross national product, we have this tremendous wealth, the economy has gone up fantastically high, the individual is making much more money. And what does it all mean once we have it? If children and parents are becoming alienated from one another, if there's greater bitterness between blacks and whites, as there is now, and if we're very bitter and over the war in Vietnam, then you wonder just what direction you're going in and what this all means.
What went wrong there? I mean, what went wrong, with President Johnson, in the sense that he was talking about a great society in 64, 65, and it hasn't happened? I mean, what went wrong with the initiative that he was
The war made a great difference, obviously, because a lot of the programs that were started just couldn't be funded and therefore couldn't be made effective. And secondly, I think we talked about it a little earlier, just giving people confidence that despite adversary happenings in within our country, or despite great handicaps, that we could still survive and surmount them. I mean, you can't think of any country that had a more difficult time than Great Britain in 1940 and 1941, 42, during that period of time. It was the finest hour, as Winston Churchill said. But this kind of a problem that we're facing is so different, because it hasn't called on those marvelous qualities that were called on in your country during that critical time.
It's terribly difficult to summarize these things, but I mean, if you had to find, and you wanted to get across to the American people today, one adjective to describe the Johnson administration's presidency, what would that adjective
be? Well, I'd rather not use an adjective, really. I think it doesn't accomplish very much good, and I don't think it makes much of a contribution.
But basically, you'd just say that it, in a sense, lost direction, really.
Well, I think that we have, in the country to some extent, and as I said, I talked about the fact that I just think we can do much, much better, this country, and that we've done such marvelous things, and I just think that we could do much, much better, and I don't want to continue like we have over the period of the last few years. I don't believe the American people do. I think we want to turn a corner, and I don't think we can at the moment.
Do you feel at the moment that in this campaign that you're waging now, I mean, you must overall feel that the name, your family name, is a tremendous advantage?
Yes.
Is there any ways in which it's ever hindered what you've been trying to do?
No, I think it focuses more attention on what I say and what I did, I mean, before I became a candidate. And therefore, there's more controversy about what I do and what I say. Somebody else could say it, and there's not a great deal of criticism if I get involved in it. So I pay some price for it, but obviously it's a great asset, obviously, because I think people have such great affection for President Kennedy.
Do you ever worry? I mean, I was just thinking, you mentioned Winston Churchill and so on. Do you ever worry about how, I mean, your father was very distinguished, had a very distinguished career, but nevertheless, by the very fact of what you and your brother have done, in a sense, going even further politically, that has done that thing that children like to feel about their parents, that in a sense it's topped even the achievements of the father, in a sense. Do you ever worry about how your children are ever going to be able to feel that they've in any way topped what you've done?
No, I think that they'll develop their own lives, and I have a son, and I talked to one of my sons about it one time, and we were talking about what he was going to do, and he said that he was 12 years old, and he wanted to make a contribution. And I said, I didn't want to get involved in political life. And I said, well, what do you want to do? And he said, I want to make a contribution. He loves animals, and just knows all about it and read a lot of books. And he said, I want to make a contribution like Darwin and Audubon did. And so I think people work out their own lives. And he wants to make that kind of contribution, and I think the other ones will do the same thing, just as long as they understand that in the last analysis what is important, that they give something to others and not just turn in on themselves and decide that they are important and what's significant is they themselves, that what they can contribute and what they can give. is the only thing that matters.
Right, because I mean, I can see if the different fields could be a solution, because, for instance, I was thinking that Winston Churchill, you know, although Lord Randolph Churchill had a distinguished career, Winston Churchill then went further, but Randolph Churchill has found it, mutual friend Randolph indeed, has found it, you know, quite difficult, in a sense, to find his niche, oddly enough, until he came to write this marvellous biography
of
his father.
Which I thought were wonderful. Yeah.
But it's quite difficult, it would be quite difficult for them to find a higher office in the presidency of the United States to move on to, but you think they've got to move into separate fields?
Well, I suppose, but they're young and they'll, I would hope that they will adjust. You know, whatever that means. But
If a doctor said to you, and it's quite obvious looking at you, he won't, but if a doctor said to you, the strain of all this is too much and you must give up politics and live the quiet life or something, what would your initial emotion be? Would it be anger, relief, disappointment, or what? I mean, it's obviously not going to happen, and I'm not cunningly suggesting that it will.
No, I would in this particular effort, I would continue. I mean, I don't think that would be very important.
If you weren't in politics, what would you be doing now?
Well, I think I'd probably like to teach. I'd like to go to a university and perhaps like to read more and perhaps write some.
And looking at the United States in 10 years' time, if we could do it tonight, how would you say it would look different and be different to what it is today?
Well, what would I like to see the United States be?
Yes.
What do I think it's going to be?
What do you think it's going to be?
Because I'm an optimist, I would hope that we are going to be...
Well, we have had 8 years of President Robert...
You know, well, then that... Now, well, that's just what I would hope, that that we've made a... areas in which I think that we have to really accomplish something is that we've made a major contribution in trying to cut down the reliance on nuclear weapons, that we've taken steps in toward disarmament, that we've developed a system along with other nations of the world to help the undeveloped nations of the world, and that we've established a system within our own country that's so that people can, even the very poor and the impoverished, can educate their children, and that they in turn can find decent jobs and live a decent life and not be hopeless and not be filled with despair. That's what I'd like to see.
And do you think these goals are obtainable?
Yes. They're not answered, but we can make some progress toward them, and we should try. And that's what I think it's all about. That's why I think, and I don't think if we start trying in 1969, that we're going to start running out of time. Because we have the capacity to destroy all mankind, and we have to start making some progress.
Senator Kennedy, thank you very much.
If you would like more information on the PCJ archives, our email address is pcjmedia@gmail.com.